Chapter 21 The Pixie Factory was on, or actually under, a planet about the size of Earth, except that it had only a thin atmosphere. The planet and the entire star system was heavily monitored and guarded, and the Maxalts had a big military base there and facilities to make other important things. But the entire purpose of the Rotten Kitties being in that star system was to manufacture Pixies and anything else there was to support the effort of making, securing, and then transporting Pixies. Stealing Pixies while they were in transit from the factory to one of the two vaults was a possibility we considered and quickly discarded, because the ships transporting Pixies were always escorted by an entire battle group designed to protect their precious cargo from the advanced Rindaloo. No way did our pathetic Frankenstein monster of a space truck have any chance of surviving an encounter with a Maxalt's battle group. The planet, which we called Detroit because it was basically there for manufacturing, and because Detroit is a better name than Pixieland, was surrounded by defense satellites and encased in sensor fields. What gave me hope that we might actually be able to break into the factory was seeing that the defenses were almost entirely in orbit, and the sensor fields did not actually extend all the way down to the surface. Skippy explained that planet had been chosen for its lack of a magnetic field that could affect the process of making Pixies, and that was also why sensor field projectors were kept far away from the factory complex itself. The Maxalts were supremely confident that nothing larger than a pebble could get through their sensor fields without being detected, and Skippy agreed. So how was I planning to break into the factory if there was no way for us to sneak through the pesky sensor fields? Well, it's simple. I planned to cheat. "Okay, the first package is in position," Skippy announced in a weary tone. It had taken him 3 days, 9 hours, 34 minutes, and I'm sure he could report exactly how many microseconds to get the super-stealthy package down into the target cavern. The package was a tiny missile he built just for the mission, designed for the very difficult requirement of penetrating the sensor network around the planet to get as close to the factory as possible. The answer, after a lot of argument from me, was 36 kilometers was the closest we could get. My arguing had been because I assumed Skippy was being his usual pessimistic self of telling me everything was impossible and it simply couldn't be done, and why couldn't I understand we should just give up and it was hopeless, and maybe I should just drown myself in a bottle of tequila. Damn, sometimes he was such a downer that I should have named him Eeyore instead of Skippy. In this case, after he made a couple of small tweaks to the plan at my request, I had to agree that even getting the package within 36 kilometers of a heavily guarded senior species factory was pretty much a freaking miracle. The package's cargo was a heavily shielded canister containing one end of a micro-wormhole. The limited ability Skippy had to maneuver the missile was the key factor in selecting which cavern to use for our truly lunatic stunt. The canister with the micro-wormhole inside it could not be handled roughly. Skippy could not make the little missile perform sharp turns or accelerate hard. Those limitations actually did not matter because abrupt maneuvers would be like us shining a beacon at the very sophisticated detection network surrounding the planet. Skippy had to do his old trick of mapping the sensor fields and anticipating how they would change, then feeding back to the Maxalt's sensor system what the computer expected to see if space around the planet Detroit were blank. Back when he had performed a certified Skippy miracle to get our Falcon dropship through the Bosphorok sensor fields down to the moon base, he had moaned and groaned and gone into full diva princess mode about how difficult that was, and how we monkeys could not begin to appreciate how incredible that feat of amazingness was, blah, blah, blah. Now he admitted that what he'd done at the moon base was merely a crude trick compared to navigating the wormhole-carrying missile down to the surface of Detroit and threading it through underground tunnels and caverns. 9 times the missile had to stop its flight and bore through solid ground to get to a tunnel. Cutting a route from one narrow underground passage to another was tricky enough without having to assure the Maxalts did not see what the missile was doing. 2 times, Skippy let the missile float along underground streams that flowed in the general direction of the target cavern. We all knew he was under a tremendous pressure because for the past 2 days, Skippy not only had not talked to any of us when we tried talking to him, he had given a one-word reply. "Busy," is all he said, so we left him alone. Nagatha told me privately that she was concerned about the little shithead because he was concentrating so intensely. She had to run the ship all by herself, with of course very little help from us monkeys, and although that was good practice for her and our meat sack crew, it was worrying that if we ran into trouble, Skippy might not be able to help us unless he abandoned his control over the missile. Releasing the missile would instantly expose it to the Maxalt's detection system and blow any chance we had to steal a set of blank pixies. The first phase of our plan required getting a micro-wormhole into a cavern under the factory, as close as possible, and Skippy's announcement of success meant we were ready for the next step. I guess technically the next step was also in process, because there were five more tiny custom-built missiles carrying micro-wormholes on their way down to the same cavern. The second missile was still 40,000 kilometers above the planet's surface, with Skippy bringing that follow-on device down using the experience he gained from guiding the first missile. It took another 19 nerve-wracking hours to get all six missiles, each carrying a micro-wormhole, down to the cavern, or near the cavern. Because the event horizons for micro-wormholes can interfere with each other if they get too close, only two of the units actually went into the cavern. The first missile's nose cone split open, exposing the micro-wormhole which Skippy used to project a stealth field through. At first, the stealth field was only 2 meters in diameter, slightly larger than the entire cavern. When I use the word cavern, do not think of a giant underground cave. This place was chosen for its convenient location, and not for its size. A larger underground cavern would likely not have been allowed to exist anywhere near the Pixie Factory, so we were lucky to find even a very small one. The cavern we found was not large enough for a human, and we needed it to be much, much larger. So Skippy carefully pulled the second missile inside the cavern to the far end, away from the micro-wormhole that was projecting the stealth field. That micro-wormhole was exposed on the end of a manipulator arm, and Skippy hugely expanded the event horizon so it was 1.2 millimeters across, about as big as it could get without becoming unstable. He used that tear in space-time to dig out the compacted soil and rock around the cavern, making it larger and larger each time the event horizon passed through. What happened to the rocks and soil that went into the wormhole? Where did it go? It went through the other end of the micro-wormhole, which was in an empty cargo bay aboard the Flying Dutchman far out beyond the edge of the star system. We could watch that cargo bay through a camera, seeing a tiny but steady trickle of fine dust falling to create a cone-shaped pile on the floor of the bay. To our eyes, the trickle of dust came from nowhere, because no human eye could see the micro-wormhole. By the time Skippy was done expanding the underground cavern, the cargo bay was three-quarters full of dust, and the micro-wormhole was worn out, with Skippy reporting he was having to work hard to keep the event horizon from collapsing. When the job was done to his satisfaction, he closed that second micro-wormhole, and then we had only five more to rely on for the mission. The good news is one of those five remaining micro-wormholes was a spare that we had brought along in case the excavation proved too stressful for one magical little space-time rip. With the cavern dug out to optimal size using only one unit, we had an extra safety margin in case something went wrong. With the cavern complete and the stealth field wrapped tightly around it, and the Maxalts given no sign they had noticed unusual activity, we were almost ready for the next phase of the operation, the most critical, most dangerous phase. Before that, Skippy wanted to send gamma-ray pulses through the third micro-wormhole to see if the damping effect of his modified stealth field was effective in concealing those rays from being detected by the Maxalts. He also was waiting to make sure the area around the cavern was stable, that the hole he had just laboriously dug was not going to fall in on itself. It bothered me that the little beer can was still not communicating, and I didn't want to bother him, so I asked our ship's AI. "Hey, Nagatha," I called her softly. "Can you ask Skippy how he—"
"I can speak for myself, Joe," he cut in.
He sounded tired. Not just tired, but worn down. That was, of course, impossible, even if his internal store of metallic helium-3 was running low, because he drew most of his energy from higher space-time, or some science-y bullshit like that. For all I knew, he secretly recharged himself through a USB port when I wasn't looking. "Hey, Mr. Magnificent, you sound pretty burned out. Everything okay with your power supply and all that?" "My power supply has never been better, Joe. If I sound worn out, it is because I am emotionally drained. You know how absent-minded and ADD I am. I'll deny the whole thing if you tell anyone I said that. Over the past more than 2 days, I have had to pay close attention and concentrate the whole time, and it sucked. Slipping those little missiles through Maxalt's defenses was the most difficult thing I have ever done." "Come on, Skippy," I tried to cheer him up. "I saw you warp a freaking star." "Technically, I used the star's magnetic field to make it warp itself, but that was easy-peasy compared to what I just did. Joe, he lowered his voice. "Please don't tell anyone, but
A couple minutes after the first mini-missile entered the sensor grid's effective detection range, I realized I had underestimated the capability of the AI that runs their sensor network. Really, what I underestimated was the Maxaltz's understanding of higher-order math and their surprisingly insightful grasp of quantum. Ugh, why am I trying to explain this to you? Bottom line is the Maxaltz are smarter than I thought. They have discovered some facts about the nature of reality that I do not think even the Rindaloo understand.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It all sounded very impressive to me.
Why does that matter?
It matters because my ability to predict hidden patterns in the sensor fields was a lot more limited than I expected. Twice I was forced to hold both the lead and follow-on missiles in place while I rethought my approach and developed a new branch of mathematics. Joe, several times I feared that I had been outsmarted for the very first time. Fortunately, the nature of quantum reality is not as random as the Maxaltz think it is, so in the end I triumphed. My concentration continued while I guided the other missiles down to the cavern, so I went silent again shortly after those missiles neared the top of the atmosphere. What I want to say is, after this mission is over, I seriously need to sit on a couch with a box of Cap'n Crunch and rot my brain by watching a SpongeBob SquarePants marathon.
If you make it a Simpsons marathon, I'll watch it with you.
Deal. Talk to you later.
Later meant 2 hours later. When Skippy reemerged from his self-imposed fortress of solitude, he announced that all 5 remaining micro-wormholes were in position, fully checked out, and ready.
Okay, we're ready.
His voice actually trembled a bit, which scared me. Either he was super tired and making his voice tremble so we would understand the strain he was under, or he really was losing control.
The stealth field is effectively absorbing and containing the gamma-ray pulses I have been sending into the cavern. The Maxaltz have not reacted in any way. I am fairly confident our activity thus far has not been detected. Of course, it helps that their sensor coverage is poor near the factory complex.
Hey, that's great.
You okay, buddy?
Nagatha, I added, because I worried Skippy wouldn't tell the truth if he was getting overwhelmed.
How's Skippy doing?
I told you! I can speak for myself, Joe!
The tremble was replaced by a tone of annoyance. I counted that as an improvement.
Skippy is fine, Joseph, Nagatha reported.
Ah, good. That made me feel better.
To be clear, she made a throat-clearing sound, when I said fine, I meant it in the way you humans say fine, when you are in fact not fine, but you do not wish to admit it.
Hey! Skippy protested.
Skippy is significantly fatigued.
Nagatha ignored the beer can's attempt to interrupt.
Considering the vital and extremely delicate nature of the next phase of this operation, I recommend that Skippy rest. You and your team should rest also, Joseph. The past 2 days have been especially hard on you. I have noticed you were not sleeping well.
I haven't been sleeping much, but I also haven't been doing much of anything. It was my turn to protest.
Yes, dear, you have been doing something that is very stressful. You have been worrying. I have observed that worrying drains your energy. If I may, I suggest that Skippy and you and the others going on the away mission rest for 8 hours before departure.
That made me groan inside, which I kept to myself. Except I'm sure she monitored my vital signs and saw my blood pressure spike or drop or whatever it does in that situation.
Listen, Agatha, I appreciate your concern, and that would be a great idea if we had more time.
Joseph, she said gently,
I only mention it because the upcoming operation is of vital importance to the survival of your entire species, and the operation is extremely delicate, which requires Skippy and the away team to be as sharp as you can be.
Crap, she was right. She was absolutely 100% right. To my surprise, Skippy agreed.
Joe, he sighed, though I am reluctant to say this, Nagatha is correct. You meat sacks should rest before going into action. I also, and this is not easy to say, could use some downtime. My processors do not require sleep. However, the recent continuous strain on my matrix has made me realize there are adjustments needed to the redesign I implemented after I rebooted myself. Yes, I am the new, improved, even more awesome Skippy. However, even I can benefit from minor tweaks to my internal structure. While I was concentrating extremely hard to get the 6 packages down into that cavern, I was not able to perform running maintenance on my internal indexing and doing what you think of as rearranging my sock drawers. Ah, I got it. Your matrix is not all neat and tidy the way you like it. Whether I like it does not matter, Joe. What does matter is that my processing speed and flexibility is decreased by the degraded condition of my matrix. Bottom line is I should take myself partially offline for a while to be safe. On the moon base mission, almost everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong, and still we were successful. The mission to acquire pixies is an order of magnitude more difficult and delicate. In this mission, absolutely every part of the plan could go exactly right, and we could still fail, because there are too many unknowns. There is zero margin for error on this one, Joe. I stifled a yawn. Got it. Okay, I do not like another delay. Time is running out for us to learn where those ships are going. They might already be on their way to Earth. To give us the best chance for success, we will stand down for... I thought about what to say. The small away team was tired, and we could use a solid 8 hours of sleep. Add time before and after. 14 hours, is that good? That is good, Joe. Skippy's own voice contained a hint of a yawn. He was doing that for my benefit. Smythe, Grugian, and Reed did not like hearing about the delay. They all wanted to go and get it over with, and they were all keyed up to launch their phase of the mission on schedule. They also understood when I explained the reasons, and Smythe set an example by going straight to his cabin to maximize sleep time. We planned to meet at the dropship in 12 hours, giving us 2 hours to pre-flight the bird and triple-check everything before launching our ultra-risky mission. This is crazy, this is crazy, this is crazy, Skippy's avatar muttered to himself while helpfully standing atop the console between pilot seats, swinging his arms in front of him and bending his legs like he was working up the nerve to jump into a swimming pool. You're not boosting our confidence here, Skippy. I shot him a worried look. Is this going to work or not? The theory is sound. He was instantly defensive. That's not what you said when I explained what I wanted to do. That is because you had no idea what you were asking. Only my incredible magnificence makes your lunatic scheme possible, if it is possible. I would feel a lot better if we had been able to fully test this scheme. You told me we don't have enough equipment for a full test. Well, we don't. If we strip any more parts off the Dutchman, we might as well park it, because it won't be going anywhere. As Avatar turned to look at the cockpit displays. It sure is dark out there. This is creepy. A very much modified Dragon dropship was hovering in a chamber we had carved and melted under the surface of a nameless small comet way out in the Oort cloud of the star system where the Pixie Factory was located. Just getting the Dragon down into the chamber had been a major project. All the extra gear attached made it too big to comfortably fit through the docking bay door, and we couldn't afford to risk damaging the gear that could not be replaced, so we had flown the Dragon out the door, where a crew bolted on all the extra gear. Then we left our stealth starship behind to engage the Dragon's own enhanced stealth field and fly down into a narrow tunnel that led to the chamber. The comet rotated very slowly, so the tunnel entrance would be facing away from the inner star system for another 87 days. That tunnel had so many twists and turns that even if the entrance had been directly facing the distant star, no light would have been detected in the cavern where the Dragon was hiding. The tricky part of using a comet to conceal our highly modified dropship was that the Dutchman first had to take nearly a week to slowly and steadily nudge the comet until it was traveling in the exact direction we needed and at the exact speed. The comet was now moving on a vector very different from most other objects in the local Oort cloud, and the Maxalts would eventually notice that, but because the comet was a small, dirty chunk of ice, no one was paying close attention to it. Sir, Reed got my attention from the pilot seat. Even in the low gravity of the comet, our little Dragon, burdened by all the heavy equipment bolted onto it, could not hover forever without running the fuel supply dangerously low. Yeah, thank you. I acknowledged her concern. Skippy, is there any reason we can't go on schedule? Oh, so many reasons, Joe. The Avatar shook its head slowly. Sanity, for one. Then there is, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I waved a hand, irritated at him. We are doing this. Will waiting increase our chances of success? Nothing could increase your chance of success, he sniffed. And I noticed he said your instead of our. The traitorous little shithead was already emotionally distancing himself from us, partly so he wouldn't share any of the blame if the mission went sideways.
Fine, then. Everything is programmed into the autopilot?
Rather than pointing to the walnut-sized navigation computer built into the flight console between the pilot seats, I jerked a thumb backwards to the pile of hardware jammed into the cabin, forcing Smythe and Grudzian to occupy jump seats attached to the rear of the cockpit bulkhead. Through yet another micro-wormhole, this one's near end was in a canister strapped to the back of my seat. Skippy had instantaneous communications between our Dragon and the Dutchman that was parked only 50,000 kilometers away for safety in case the experiment failed and the resulting explosion cracked the little comet. The speed of light time lag across even a mere 50,000 clicks was too much for Skippy to control the experiment, so he grudgingly consented to create yet another tiny wormhole for us.
Everything is programmed that can be programmed ahead of time. I told you that.
You really want to do this?
I looked at the sour expression on Reed's face, then back to Smythe and Grudzian. None of us were enthusiastic about trying our latest wacky stunt.
I really do not, Skippy. I met Reed's eye roll with a shrug. None of us want to be here. We're doing it anyway.
Initiate on schedule, please.
Okie dokie, it's your funeral, he grumbled.
This is all going to happen faster than monkeys can think, so shut up and let me work.
The first thing that happened, which I only know about from sensor data afterward, was a jumble of jump drive coils and capacitors attached to the outside of our Dragon created a jump wormhole, projecting the far end across the star system and into the cavern Skippy had dug out under the Pixie factory on the planet Detroit. That jump wormhole survived only a quarter of a second and was not more than half a millimeter in diameter at the event horizon. As Skippy said, things happened fast, so a quarter second was plenty of time to either get the job done or create a disaster that could blow away the comet and force the Dutchman to perform an emergency jump away. When the jump wormhole opened and verified as momentarily stable, Skippy analyzed sensor data and sent updated instructions to the autopilot that was really a jump computer. Even with Skippy's instantaneous communication through the magic of micro-wormholes, he could not control our jump, and once the Dragon began to be pulled into the second jump wormhole, his connection to us would be cut off. We needed the crude assembly of mismatched alien circuits stolen from the Roach Motel's junkyard to control the jump for us, and I'm sure the thing was talking to itself something like, "What the F? You have got to be kidding me," when it realized it was supposed to guide us to jump through another wormhole. My genius idea, which started as more of a concept, okay, more of a daydream than an actual idea, was for us to gain access to the Pixie factory by jumping a dropship close enough that we could walk to the factory complex. I'd been inspired by that book about teleporting dragons, because we would basically be teleporting a dropship. Skippy had convinced me, after endless and futile argument, that there was absolutely no way something the size of a dropship, not even something the size of a human encased in a spacesuit and stealth field, could approach the planet without being detected. The Maxalt's sensor grids around the moon were much too sophisticated. Not even Skippy could manipulate them enough to slip us through. I got the idea by thinking about how shortly after we captured the Flying Dutchman, we got rid of more than a dozen unwanted Kristang starships by having Skippy take control and jump them into a gas giant planet. Yes, sure, those ships had been destroyed from emerging deep down in the gravity well inside a thick atmosphere and from their jump wormholes being close enough to overlap and destabilize. What I had proposed to Skippy was that somehow his incredible magnificence could control a jump so a small dropship could survive the journey. Unfortunately, my understanding of jump physics had been woefully, hilariously wrong, or the cartoon Skippy used to explain jump physics to me had been wrong. Whatever. Although ships going through jump wormholes go from one location in space-time to another location without traveling all the space in between, the two ends of a jump wormhole itself do have a tenuous connection through the space between them. Technically, that is not true, but when one end of a wormhole is inside a planet, the mass of the planet between it and the other end does warp and distort and try to tear apart the wormhole. Skippy's boundless magnificence could keep such a wormhole from collapsing long enough for something to travel through, but whatever made the transition would itself be crushed and torn apart by the severe distortion. So, the gleeful answer from the beer can was that this time, an idea I proposed would not work, and he could look forward to endlessly mocking me. Except, of course, that failing to get a batch of pixies would soon lead to the demise of me and all other humans, which threw Skippy into a deep depression.
not because my species would become extinct, but because he would not have a species as dumb as humans to screw with. You might think his lack of concern for humanity's survival prospects was a bad thing, but his selfish desire to continue screwing with us hairless apes was a great motivator, so I didn't waste time yelling at him for being an inconsiderate asshole. On his own, Skippy realized there was a way to make my crazy idea work, and that the problem with my idea was that it simply was not crazy enough. A jump wormhole emerging in the gravity well of a planet would be so severely distorted that nothing physical could survive passing through it. But that was not an obstacle to Skippy the even more magnificent than he imagined. He was inspired by our jumping through an elder wormhole during the zero-hour mission. Sure, that stunt had broken an ancient wormhole, nearly destroyed the ship, and thrown us into the future. But that experience yielded two benefits. First, Skippy had created a new branch of multitudinous... No, that's not it. Multidimensional trans... Nope, I still got it wrong. Anyway, it was some super-duper fancy type of math that nearly made even his ginormous brain explode when he ran the calculations. After that fateful jump, he had been able to refine his math and simplify it so even a comparatively stupid jump drive navigation AI could run the calculations, even though the poor device had no prayer of understanding what it was doing. The second benefit of using an elder wormhole for an experiment was he had discovered something his math had hinted at, but he hadn't been able to confirm until we actually did it. When one wormhole goes through another wormhole, that inner wormhole can be extremely skinny, like barely 8 angstroms in width. An angstrom is a very small thing. I had to look it up, and I still don't understand it, but take my word that it is super-duper small. Think about this. 2 hydrogen atoms will fit inside an angstrom. Why did we care about this newly discovered fact? Because it meant our inner jump wormhole could be compressed to fit through stable pathways inside the first wormhole, the one that was distorted by passing through the mass of the planet. Or, that is what Skippy thought could happen, except he wasn't 100% sure because it had never been done before. We would have liked to try it in another solar system far from anyone's notice, but we did not have any jump drive coils or capacitors to spare, and Skippy estimated the jump navigation computer he slapped together with duct tape and a prayer would not be good for more than 2 jump attempts before it burned out. Also, the timing was very tricky, because the cavern under the factory was moving as the planet moved around the star and rotated around its axis. We had to jump at the exact moment when our dragon was motionless compared to the cavern, or we would emerge from the jump wormhole's event horizon to smack hard into the cavern walls. So, once again, we had to grit our teeth and trust the awesomeness. The second wormhole pulled us through the first one, with the dragon emerging inside the cavern Skippy created. Both wormholes collapsed immediately, and the stealth field dampening effect barely contained the gamma radiation. "Whew! That was close," Skippy gasped a moment later, speaking to us through one of the micro-wormholes that were parked just outside the cavern. "Wait a minute, don't do anything," he implored. "Okay. Okay, wormhole 1 was overstressed by the stealth field containing that much radiation. I had to bring backup wormhole 4 online to take over the stealth projection, and I shut down 1. But everything is fine, Skippy?" I asked with my heart in my throat while I gestured for Reed to set the dragon down very gently and kill the engines. "Yeah," he laughed nervously. "Why would anything be wrong?" His voice ended in a squeak. I braced myself for the fatally bad news. "What happened?"
"You are alive, aren't you? Be grateful, Joe," he sniffed.
"We were alive before we trusted ourselves to your idiotic math. If all we wanted was to be alive, we wouldn't have done this. Did it work? Do the Maxolts know we are here?"
"The good news is those rotten kitties and their sensor network have no idea you just snuck in through the back door. Well, I guess there is more good news. I now have enough data to refine my calculations, so your outbound jump should not be as risky. If, you know, there is an outbound jump."
"If? Crap. What went wrong?"
That pile of junk I threw together to control jump navigation kind of blew a fuse. Luckily, I contacted it through this end and fed it updated settings, which I could do, because the other end was further back in time. It's complicated, Joe. Nothing to worry your fuzzy little monkey head about. The good news is I might, not making any promises here, be able to fix the computer and revise the programming before you have to jump out. Otherwise, you are not jumping anywhere."
Shit.
Turning in my seat, I saw a thin orange tendril of smoke drift upward from the makeshift jump computer.
Skippy, that thing is on fire.
Not anymore. I cut the power and activated the fire suppression gear. You shouldn't breathe that smoke. It is toxic. I wouldn't worry too much about it, Joe.
You have nothing to worry about.
Oh, I wasn't talking about myself, see? This is me demonstrating my mastery of empathy. I meant, you should not worry about it.
Oh. The relief was so abrupt it made me shiver.
Cool. Because you can easily fix it?
Ha! As if, dude. Right now I have no freaking clue if I can fix it. You should not worry, because there is nothing you can do about it. What you should worry about is the next step of the mission.
My reply was cut off by Smythe. He's correct, sir. We have a job to do.
Skippy, if we ever try this trick again, we will first test it by jumping you into a star.